hamster with a blunt penknife would do it quicker.
Welcome back to A Hamster with a Blunt Penknife, the Doctor Who commentary podcast. Mr. Jack Rees, hello, welcome back.
Hello, thank you for having me back.
You know, I've got something to tell you. You know, your Cash Trevor episodes were massively popular.
Really?
I kicked into the top 10 of TV reviews that week.
What?
Of all the TV review podcasts. There we go.
What other TV review podcasts are there?
Are you kidding me? There's thousands of the bloody things. I'm usually finding it out with the Gilmore Girls people, the Friends people, Toby Haydock's one, you know, those sort of people. But you inched me into the top 10. I'm not there very often, usually the 20, but not the top 10. It must be the fact that, you know, you were systematically deconstructing your childhood and actually realizing throughout that podcast that Doctor Who was, in fact, really shit. That was the conclusion.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
it was
basically
therapy, really, you know. I'm wondering, do these other podcasts, is it like cheerleading gangs? Do you all have like a bit of a rivalry and do you meet up and have like gang fights?
No, I don't meet up with the Gilmore Girls podcast. No, I've got nothing in common with them at all. Well, you know, Too Hot for TV's in there every now and again. Trap one. So the Doctor Who ones sort of jump about the place. But I usually chart pretty well, but I charted extremely well that week. So thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah, good, good. Well, happy to help. I don't think Cacheville was a big favourite of many people's, not even like Doctor Who fans. I think
no,
it's
it weren't yours by
low.
The end of that commentary as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I found myself questioning why I liked it as well by the end of that conversation.
What a wonderful, uplifting experience it was.
I've got to say, though, that I'm a little on the fence with the episode we're talking about today. So I'm already at that point, whereas I think you like it a lot.
Oh, yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it.
Well, what is it we're going to talk about today?
We're going to talk about Kill the Moon.
Yeah, that's not a popular episode, Jack.
Again, I think I missed... This was... When this aired, it was probably... I was probably like 20... 25? So I wasn't really going on either forums or social media to know what the reaction was. So I was completely disconnected from what fandom thought of the TV series at the time. So if anything, it's a bit of a pure response.
What a great place to be. In fact, you know, I actually said to someone recently, watch the episode and then leave it a week. Don't go looking for any other opinions. Form your opinion. And then if you want to, go and look after that. And I think probably for most people, I think most people go on and then the bitching starts and then, you know, that's why they hate everything.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a problem. Like, you know, can I tell you a story, right? When Starbeast, Wild Blue Yonder and The Giggle came out, well, I had a great time with the Starbeast. Then I chatted to your brother afterwards, who absolutely loathed the thing. And it said... proceeded to tell me why it was the worst bit of television he'd seen in the last two decades. I was like, oh. And then I watched it again. I was like, oh, I didn't enjoy it as much anymore. So, yeah, you're right. I think it's a good place to be. Ignore everyone else and make your own opinion.
Also, I think maybe just... I feel like I need to just not listen to any publicity at all. I need to be taken to, like, a dark room and with like, 2 minutes warning to say there's new Doctor Who on. And then they put a bag over my head and then they put me in a van and then they take me to watch the episode. And then I stay in the room for a week and then I come out and it's fine.
Are you a sort of one and out? You watch it once and then maybe you watch it again in a couple of years.
I've rewatched it less and less. It's very rare that I rewatch an episode. I used to do it all the time, but it has to be a really good one. But now the thing is that now... as I've just moved in with my girlfriend, we're doing like a condensed rewatch of a lot of the new series. And it's actually a chance for me to watch all the things that I've only seen once or have forgotten about, you know, things like the Woman Who Lived. I have no memories of that whatsoever. Like watching that was like watching a missing episode.
I don't have a clue what that's about. Is that the one with the Lion Man in it?
The Lion Man, and yeah, the Doctor basically helps stage a house robbery with a highwayman.
Yeah.
And it was great because there was no expectations to watch it. Obviously, all the things that I disliked about it the first time were there, but there was way more for me to like. again, because the pressure of it being, you know, the newest Doctor Whoever that's got to be amazing wasn't there. So most of the new series is a lot better than I remember it being.
It's just extremely competent. I think we do have this issue that every episode has to be the best thing ever, or it's going to be cancelled like it was in 1989. You know, since she's not here, can I ask you, sort of, what periods did your girlfriend particularly like then?
So we saw a bit of, we did a bit of Tenant. So I'm trying to cut out all of the things that I think are bad. And it, but to her, it's still, you know, an okay TV show. She doesn't think it's the best thing ever. She thinks that Matt Smith is the best doctor.
Oh,
And she
bless
had
her.
no preconceptions of him. She'd never seen him before. And she had no idea what he'd be like. But a few episodes into series five, she was like, I can't imagine any other person playing the doctor.
Wow. I mean, that's not an unpopular opinion. I think a lot of people think that about Matt Smith.
No, I think that his series five performance is the best the doctor's ever been.
Yeah,
I
you
won't
said
comment on the
series
other
five
series.
very specifically then.
Yeah, most of it's it, she it's all, she's a big Harry Potter fan, so it's going down well with her. So she's a big fan of Riversong, a big fan of Rory, a big fan of Missy. So nothing's really stood out as being particularly bad. So the sign that it's a good relationship.
Yeah, hey, I'm in a relationship with a Doctor Who fan. That means one conversation and this whole thing could be over. And we've kicked out all the duplicates now, so we've only got one collection between us. That's how solid this relationship supposedly is. So if we do ever separate, that collection's got to be split in half.
Well, I'm such a fan that when you said we've kicked out all the duplicates, I thought you meant like Dalek agents that were living in
we're not doing Asylum of the Daleks today. Well, let's circle round to Peter Capaldi and the 12th Doctor, because I glean from our messages that you're quite keen.
I'm a big fan. I think Capaldi's the probably my favorite new series doctor. I'm aware of how he might have been badly handled to begin with, but overall my favorite TARDIS team is Capaldi and Jenna Louise Coleman.
I'm going to confess something to you. My two favourite incarnations of the Doctor, and they're season specific as well, are season 22, Colin, and series 8, Capaldi. So I've got a feeling I just like the Doctor being a total
Well, I get
cunt.
this.
He's horrible in both seasons.
Yeah, there's degrees of it, but I think if anything, Kill the Moon for me was the point where the series settled a bit, and even though his doctor is, you know, kinder and gentler and, you know, softened from here on, this story kind of feels like the benchmark, because even though it's got a doctor that's being very controversial and difficult, it's still not, we're moving away from Malcolm Tucker in space, which seems to have been the brief when they first started.
I should have just gone the whole hog and had him swearing because he basically was that character, right? Yeah. And you're right. In this episode, it is probably his most arsehole move of many arsehole moves that he makes in Series 8. But we'll get there, talk about that. Can I very quickly ask you again? Because this is a not we perspective, and that's quite interesting on Capaldi. How does your girlfriend find 12?
No, she likes him, but she raised a really interesting point, which was when we watched The Caretaker, she found it odd that he was, that the doctor was so, had such a strong dislike of Danny Pink. Because it implied that Matt Smith was fancied Clara. As in, she was reading into it that the doctor only wanted her to go out with someone who looked like he did, but anything else, any other guy like Danny Pink implies that it actually was a romantic relationship. And so it's got this, he's being oddly territorial
Right.
as
'Cause
though
there's
he did have proper feelings for her, which I've never heard that mentioned. So that was
That's why
interesting.
it's so interesting to watch with a non-fan. You know, they don't come with any preconceptions either. So I always find their opinions are a lot more interesting. Oh, sorry, not your opinions won't be interesting today, I'm sure. Because that fella in The Caretaker that looks like Matt Smith, isn't it? There's another
Yeah.
teacher. Yeah, she doesn't like Danny Pink. No, he doesn't like Danny Pink. Well, I can understand that entirely,
No,
if I'm honest.
she's fine with Danny Pink, and was very devastated when he died, because another big thing is that I get emotional and cry at Doctor Who, and she doesn't at all, because she's like, I can't get upset about this, because anyone who dies, we're going to see them again. Or we're going to go back in time and see them, or they're going to get saved and it's going to get undone. With Danny Pink, it threw her, because she said, well, we've seen his ancestor, his
Yeah.
future ancestor in Listen. So she was absolutely mind blown that they killed him.
I don't know, I've got another question I want to ask you. I promise you we'll press play in a second, but what are the most emotional moments in Doctor Who then? What hit you the most?
Too many. Probably the end of this gets me.
Oh, it's fabulous.
Heaven Sent gets me, obviously. The Day of the Doctor gets me quite a bit. The scene in the barn and the scene in the prison cell in Day of the Doctor, they always get me. And it's generally sad moments where the show feels like it's the exact same character from 40 years prior,
Right, I
when
gotcha.
it's kind of quite slightly haunting, sad moments where you go, you're feeling for the Doctor, but you're under no pretense that it's the same character that, say, Tom Baker was playing. I think that those get me.
And that's interesting that you cherry picked all moments from Moffat's time, because I've
Yeah.
always found I'm emotionally disconnected from that era in a way that Rusty Davis makes me blub every other episode. But then I like a soap opera, so I'm cherry made for that era. You know, the mad high camp and melodrama of series 1 to 4. Chibnall's time, it's all a bit too subtle, probably for the pair of us.
I don't really have many issues with Chibnall's time, but it never really moved me enough. Power of the Doctor, obviously, but it'd be pretty hard to not make a fan emotional when you bring back all those elements. Russell T Davies scripts have made me, that they did used to make me cry. Not so the new stuff, not so much. If anything, the only thing that got me was probably Bernard Cribbins,
Oh,
his
yeah.
cameo. But I think, yeah, Stephen Moffat, for all of the flaws I'm aware of, probably is my ideal writer slash showrunner, but I'm aware that he rubs people up the wrong way.
I don't know who you're talking about. Well, look, let's skip into Kill the Moon because there's going to be a lot to talk about here. I'm going to count us in if you're ready.
Yeah.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Off we go. And straight away with a hugely dramatic opening.
Moon 2049. That's really not that far away.
Well, I just did Waters of Mars the other day, and that was sort of about 20, 30 years away as well. I quite
Yeah.
like these sort of near, it's a bit like the moon base and things like that back in the 60s, isn't it? It's near enough that you can reach it.
Yeah. Well, isn't The Hungry Earth is set like 2020, so we've already passed it.
I'll try and forget that that story
Yeah.
exists, though, you know, so most of us do. Okay, so I'd like to get Courtney out of the way very quickly, if we may, please.
Yes, Nicholas Courtney.
Courtney Woods,
Yeah.
everybody's favorite pseudo companion. She's
Yeah.
in two episodes, right? This and The
Yeah.
Caretaker.
Yes, yeah.
Is that her arc? That and this.
Yeah, well, it's not really a hark. It's more of like it's just a line that
A
goes up and down.
triangle. It's a line. Yeah.
I don't know. I have don't mind Courtney at all. I mean, I kind of like that they've I like the school setting for this series, and I like that they don't glamorize it, and that it's I mean the oddest thing about this is that it looks like a state school, but it's meant to be in Shoreditch. I don't know of any schools in Shoreditch. It's just land of like tech startups and like bougie fashion agencies.
Well, surely it's supposed to be that school from. It's Cohill, isn't it? It's the
It
one from
is,
Line of
but it's
Bouchard.
the idea that it's in Shoreditch is just blows my mind, because Shoreditch is such a desert of anything that isn't overpriced coffee and art galleries and stuff like that. But
I just think it's a gorgeous idea. When I first heard about the 12th Doctor and Clara and Danny, both school teachers, and it's
yeah.
Cohill School, I thought, well, okay, we're leaning into season one again. But well, it didn't really go down that path, did they? Because Danny never really stepped foot in.
No, but I like that. The thing is, I buy Courtney as a school kid, as in she's kind of like
Annoying.
she's annoying but an aggressive. She's not like a Hogwarts style polished, prep school kid, as in you feel like she's gonna like leave a crisp packet in the TARDIS and scrawl on it in graffiti. You scrawl on it with a marker pen. So I quite like that.
Well, later on in this one, she's on TikTok or something, isn't she? She's like in the TARDIS, beaming straight onto social media.
Yeah. So I don't mind her, and I think you raised the point, does she need to be here? But I think it makes Clara more vulnerable, the fact that she's responsible for this kid, and so the jeopardy. And I also like the fact that later the doctor refers to not even knowing how old she is,
It doesn't
which
go, what are you, 30?
I quite like that, because it continually makes Clara the figure of responsibility, whether she wants it or not.
Which is very different from the Clara of season 7B with Matt Smith, where they were just dashing about the universe, having a laugh.
Yes, yeah. We didn't watch many episodes from that bit of it, because
I can
it
see
just,
why.
yeah, it just it none of it quite land, none of it quite lands, which is odd, because at different times I love Matt Smith and I love Jenna Coleman, but them together in that series is oddly, it just doesn't really gel.
It's all the bits where he's looking up her skirt and things. And I'm like, what are we doing? What is this?
Yes, yeah.
So when Capaldi came along, obviously that had to stop because that would be very inappropriate.
Yeah, the most noticeable thing of doing this rewatch is how odd it is that Matt Smith in series five, his character is so asexual and bizarrely becomes more laddish and more kind of pervy.
Do you know what I think it is, though? I think it's the show becomes a hit in America, and I think he's bringing that sort of laddishness to the part from that point on. From the Impossible Astronaut onwards, it's a bit I find it a bit awkward.
Yeah, no, that's yeah. I'm not a fan of it, because it's so well played and kind of modest, and he's just this kind of shy, nerdy kid in series five, and I think his performance is just brilliant,
You
and
remember
it
the
gets
bit in the
lost.
lodger, Jack, when he's going, doing the
Yeah.
air kisses? It's so cute. I'm like, that's him there. You know, come the end of it, he's snogging people left, right, and center, you know?
So that's what I was glad when Capaldi came along, because obviously he's someone that looks like the classic doctors, and it immediately takes away any opportunity for kind of just if you've got an actor like Matt Smith, it's easy how as a writer you can lean into the fact that he's a good looking young man. You can't do the same with Peter Capaldi, making no comments on how he looks,
No, because you know
but
what he looks like? He looks to me not like a classic series doctor, a classic series villain, Harrison Chase,
yes.
and that sort of person, you know?
Yes. We've just met the new astronauts of this story. I recently finished reading a book, which was, I don't read that much science, like general science fiction, but I read a recent book called In Ascension by Martin McInnes, and it's all about the logistics of actually going into space. And you have to be so fit and do so much exercise
Oh
to train for
no.
this. And then I watched this and I was like, who the fuck are these people?
I mean,
But
it's
then,
Hermione Norris. Come on, man.
yeah, but it's as in you have to do so much, so like you've got to do serious weight training because you lose all your muscle mass in space. But then they explain it away because they say, well, this is a suicide mission. None of them expect to go. We don't have space programs anymore. And it's just very Doctor Who that something ridiculous appears on screen, but there's a line that explains it. So it's fine.
It is fine. And you know what? I mean, I feel like the two at the back here that are walking, they're complete non-entities. When they start dying, I don't miss them at all. But Hermione Norris's character, she does make an impact in this episode. I like just like how much of a cow she is throughout most of the episode. She doesn't really get a redeeming moment, does she? She's horrible throughout the whole thing.
She's very cynical, very, kind of bitter.
And she's the
And
one that wants to push the button, isn't she, and kill the moon.
well, it's like it's like she knows she's in an adventure, like a family adventure story, and is deliberately being the cynical one to say, just cut the crap. Also, I don't know how they did the moon in this episode.
I
I don't
was
know where
just
they
about
shot
to
it.
say, how good does this look?
It looks like the moon, and I've never been to the moon, but it
Well,
looks
it
pretty
no, it's
moony.
Spain. They're shooting this in Spain. And they've gone to this sort of it's a bit Planet of Fire-esque, that sort of quarry. And then they've obviously slapped a filter over it to make it look a bit more unearthly. It looks great. And actually, I've got to say to you, recently I've watched Planet of the Spiders for this thing. And if they'd have put this many fucking cobwebs up, we would have been in great shape in Planet of the Spiders. You just know you're in trouble the second you walk in somewhere and there's that many cobwebs about the place.
Well, it's odd. I wonder how many giant spider stories there are because we've got arachnids in the UK and we've got
Oh,
Planet of the Spiders.
tell me you love arachnids in the UK.
So sorry to be a disappointment, but I've got a big point to make here. It's a
Go on.
serious point.
Oh,
I
serious.
didn't like arachnids in the UK, and I'm going to compare it to this because here's my one big point, which you can disagree with, but I think the better the budget becomes for Doctor Who, the more it needs to be original with the scripts because it can do a monster movie like any kind of straight to DVD. Like Sharknado or whatever, it can kind of do those more authentically, but as a result, it can kind of lose the identity of the show more. So something like Planet of the Spiders, they don't have the budget for the spiders, so it's actually about these blokes at a monastery. It's actually about a bunch of middle-aged men who are having midlife crises, so practice Buddhism, and they end up conjuring up giant spiders.
Just scarier than any spider you can imagine. Although I think Planet of the Spiders does something that this and Arachnids in the UK don't come anywhere close to doing, and that's those spiders jumping on people's backs, which is such a visceral scare, you know.
And then so for something like Arachnids in the UK, I really tuned off during that because I just feel like I'm watching any other kind of monster movie that I could watch, that is being made elsewhere. Whereas Kill the Moon, I think the spiders are such a minimal part of this story, and there's, you're not going to see many stories like this in, elsewhere. So I think it does it takes quite a common trope of giant spiders, but weaves it into a much bigger story with different layers to it. So that's all I'm going to say.
I am going to counter that point though, because I do think this is a good episode and I think it's doing interesting things. I don't think it's long enough to tell the story it's telling. It has to do things very fast, like the bit where Clara reaches out to the earth and everyone on the earth makes a decision in about 5 seconds, which, you know,
But
I
Joe,
don't.
referendums are really easy. We know this. They're really
Well,
simple,
quite, yeah.
uncontroversial things.
Why does it feel like I've been waiting 5 ice ages for the next one then? But I do think this is very interesting, but very worthy. And at times a little bit dull. Whereas I think Arachnids in the UK is camp and fun, and it's got a bit more energy to it. And that's just my preference to watch.
No, that isn't that. Yeah, my preference is the other way.
And that's what's great about Doctor Who is it caters for all of us.
Yeah, but I would be totally open to seeing an extended edit, which is full of cuts to people in their houses arguing about whether to keep the lights on or not, when the whole family's been torn apart. Like, turn them on, turn them off. Like, well, I'm putting the bedside lamp on. I'm if.
Do you know, this is the Moffat era. It's ripe for that sort of situation comedy, isn't it? No, we're making an important decision. Turn them off, you know.
Yeah. I guess I'm a fan of too many ideas than too few. That's my
And there's
preference.
no ideas at all in Arachnids in the UK. But it is fun. I do think it's quite fun.
Again, it's one I never rewatched, so in a few weeks I might have changed my mind
Well, it's like,
entirely.
and what I love about the two episodes is Capaldi and Jodie Whittaker do exactly the same thing. They both stick their head in a massive black hole full of spiders and go, oh, hello. Regardless of the tone of the story, the Doctor is the Doctor.
I walked past Jodie Whittaker in the street the other day.
You never did. Did you say hello?
Yeah. I it didn't feel right, as in
Jack
she was
Rees, no.
if it was a different context, but it was like it was a really quiet, empty street, and she was there with her mate chatting, and I've got a really good eye for celebrity faces. And I clocked her and went, oh my God, it's her. And then just walked on.
I would have been all over her. I'd have jumped on her back.
Yeah, but it was, yeah, it was really bizarre. Because also, it was the same road that I've walked down where I've seen Kate Lethbridge-Stewart. But
Wow,
there's
what's down that
one road.
road?
There's one road near
Massage parlor or something?
Hampstead Heath where
Spa?
I'm just going to camp out and just wait for more people to come out.
I think that's where they do the phantom events. Maybe it's that.
I mean, I saw Peter Capaldi in a cafe in Crouch End once as well.
What the hell? How do you
He was in the
randomly
I was
just
walking
bump
in the street
into
and he was in the cafe, so I wasn't just going to suddenly go up to the cafe and go just barge in and say hello.
you and me need to swap positions, you know. I need to be where you are, and you need to be where I am.
Yeah, the thing
I'd
is,
be
when
all
I
over that.
recognize these people, I just immediately feel like a serial killer. I'm like, I can't go up to these people. It just feels odd.
Well, you don't look like a serial killer, don't worry.
I know, but I just, if anything, I want to walk past them and just do a thumbs up, and then that's it.
Who was that strange man? How scary is this? You've got the torchlights flickering, there's spiders crawling all over the walls.
It's good. I mean, it's exciting. I mean, very little, obviously, very little of Doctor Who scares me because I'm an adult, but spiders don't really freak me out.
Or me.
I'm a big fan of the return of the yo-yo. I don't know why I associate yo-yos with Doctor Who, probably because of Tom Baker. Yeah, because these spiders, they're not spiders really, are they? They're
No,
kind
they're
of
sort of glowing red
parasites.
CGI spiders, you know, the sorts that you see on Pitch Black and movies like
So the thing I never got was that Courtney kills it with the
that.
spray. You don't have spray bottles like that in space, do you? If gravity is an issue,
It looks like just a normal bleach bottle, doesn't
it looks like Cillit Bang, as though they've taken Cillit back. Also, what I
it?
like is that they refer to this base purely as the Mexicans. Just the Mexicans
Yes.
came here and built their Me Mexican space base.
It's like Chibnall's India Space Agency in Dinosaurs in a Spaceship, you know?
Yeah, but it's also specifically Mexicans, as in like, it's not South Americans, it's just Mexicans.
I think it's quite nice because back in the day, you know, back in the classic series, it was always the British Space Agency, wasn't it? You know, we achieved everything. It's nice to know that other things are going on in the world. Can I ask you a question about this? I've heard tale or critique that this is a story about abortion.
Yes,
Do you think that's the case?
I think it's it, if anything, it's I think it's too abstract for that. obviously the imagery is that you've got three women, well, two women and a young girl deciding the fate of an unborn animal. But if anything, it's more of a kind of David Attenborough natural world kind of thing of, you know, should we interfere with nature or water? I don't know. It's a bit too, it's a bit, you know, I don't think any American, you know, conservatives, like pro-lifers, are going to be using this as propaganda.
But I have heard other podcasts. There's one podcast which is all women where they absolutely slated this and gave it that reading, and it was quite a compelling argument. I was like, I'm gonna go back and watch this and see if I can. And I still really couldn't see it, but then I'm not a woman that's been in that situation, so maybe I can't see it that way.
Yeah, and it's also the consequences aren't the same because it's the whole planet is at threat from a mega monster being born. It's not quite, it's just doesn't translate to the nuances of
You know,
that debate.
if we're working under the assumption then that all this time the moon was an egg, yeah. So the
Yeah.
moon base from Seeds of Death, you know, where the TMAT
Yeah.
operations were from,
Yeah.
that's on the on that on an egg. An egg, you
Yes.
know, the moon base in the moon base.
Eggmen, or yeah, it was all Eggmen.
Wow.
So
Who
here's
says the
the
new
thing.
series can't throw new light onto the classic series?
Do you want to know the reason why I think this story was such a big hit with me?
Go on.
It's because when I was a teenager, I used to write fan fiction and put it on the web. And one of the stories was about a werewolf. A race of werewolves who had a giant werewolf leader that was imprisoned in the moon, and they were going to blow up the moon to release it. So deep down, I was just glad that they kind of interpreted that and made this.
I hate to tell
So
you this, but I think Peter Harness has actually raided your attic, read that, and then written this script.
yeah, it just it slightly reminded me of some fan fiction that I wrote, so I was really happy to see it. Same thing with, you know, when David Tennant makes that force field in The Star Beast. That
Yeah.
reminded me exactly of a bit of fan fiction I wrote as a kid.
My God.
So
It's nice to know
little
you're
things
on the
like that
same
make me
page.
happy.
Well, I really do want to talk to you more about the 12th Doctor and Clara and their relationship,
Yeah.
which has been bubbling under for half a season, but explodes at the
Yeah.
end of this story. What are they trying to do? What story are they trying to tell there? Or
I
okay,
think,
here's another approach.
yeah.
Was it wise to have a doctor and a companion to sort of chuck away that hand in hand and running off to adventures in the universe and having two people that are very unsure about each other in the TARDIS?
I think it makes traveling in the TARDIS feel real. So they make some really interesting decisions that I think are seen through. So, I mean, this story is all about the differing moralities of, you know, of a 1,000-year-old Time Lord and a human. And I think it's right to do that because we can rely on the Doctor of being too much of an authority figure, that his word is, you know, law. And I think it's good that the show challenges that more, because it stops the Doctor being a deity that is right on everything. And what this does is that it goes, not only is he right on everything, but when he tries to give it to Clara to take the responsibility, it's too much. And so that causes a fracture in their relationship. And so the result is, at the end of this story, she doesn't want to travel with the Doctor. But unlike, say, in the 80s, when lots of companions didn't want to be in the TARDIS but still went, by the next story, The Mummy on the Orient Express, they deal with it really wisely, in that it's almost like an addiction that they can't stop doing it, even if they know it's bad for them, like a bit of a toxic relationship. And so I love it because there's only so much mileage you can get out of the kind of, you know, very happy travel buddies. So, I mean, I like this, as something that's different to what's gone before and what happens again. And I totally get why you would, when we get to Jodie's tenure, I totally get why it's a fairly nice and happy and cooperative group aboard the TARDIS. But I like this to me just reminds me of the Seventh Doctor and Ace, which again was quite an intense duo. And be, could be quite fracturous and manipulative, but I just like it. I just like it a lot.
I think this would have worked for me as well if it wasn't for one single scene in this season, which I think is the payoff for all of this. Because I had a lot of troubles in the first half of the season. I'm going, God, it's that 80s thing again. I'm like, why the hell are they traveling together? Because they don't like each other half the time. And you're right, it's a sort of unhealthy relationship. But when you get to that bit in Dark Water after Danny Pink has died, and she then throws the keys into that volcano, or we think she has. She's betrayed him in a massive way. And then he turns around to her and says, "Do you honestly think that you betraying me like that would stop me from helping you out and loving you?" Essentially, is what he says to her. And it's such a great moment. It basically just gels the relationship beautifully. That no matter what she does, no matter how much she pushes him, he loves her and he'll do anything for her. I love that scene. I just think it's one of the most understatedly beautiful scenes in the new series.
I was surprised how much I loved Last Christmas on rewatch as well, as in their final reunion where they agree to travel together is very, very powerful, and it is a love story, a kind of dark and strange love story between them because they are inseparable as a pair. They are a couple in its own strange and unique way. I just think they're the best. I think they are. I don't think they've been topped as a
See,
as a
my issue then is nine, where I feel like Clara's not needed for most of nine until those last three, where she's given a lot of focus. But before that, she's written out a story. She doesn't appear at all in one story. She's an evil duplicate in another story. You can tell that Jenna Coleman was supposed to leave in Last Christmas, and they're hastily giving her parts in these scripts because she was never supposed to be in any of them. And so I feel like the run from eight up to Last Christmas, that's just great. But it kind of stops there for me. And then by the time she goes in Face the Raven in that interminable sequence when the Raven goes through her and she's making 17 speeches before she dies and then comes back again in Hellbent, I'm like, will you just go already? Like, I'm ready for Bill. Anyway.
Anyway, I think we've missed one of my favorite lines in this, which is when they kill the spider earlier. Capaldi goes, "Look at it, it's the size of a badger."
The best line in this, though, you think, is when he's got that maniacal grin on his face and he goes, "The moon's an egg."
Yes. He delivers it so well. And whilst I will say Capaldi, I think, is my favorite actor to play the role of the Doctor, there's still in our rewatch we've got up to Lie of the Land,
Oh
and
dear.
I know it's a bad story, but it's also the first story that I watched where I've gone, wow, Capaldi really isn't in this. He's really
Yeah.
it's not a bad performance, but it's the performance of someone who is dead behind the eyes and is like, when is this going to be over?
Well, I'm reliably informed now that he was fired after the Husbands of River Song, and he was then contractually obliged to come back and do Series 10, as was Moffat, because Chibbers wasn't ready. So he probably was a bit pissed and thought, "Well, do you know what? You're only getting half a performance out of me now, and I'll take the
Yeah, but
money."
I think it's odd that it showed up at that point because I don't get that same feeling from the other stories. Although we missed a few, I don't know. I don't know what
I
he's like
mean,
in Knock
well
Knock.
enough a time that the Doctor falls. He's absolutely heroic in that one, his performance. One
I
of the
mean,
best ever.
it must be so odd to be essentially fired from a TV show, then allowed back, and then suddenly you're working with Matt Lucas.
Well, it wasn't even allowed back, forced back. No wonder he won't really talk about it now. No wonder he doesn't really want anything to do with it. You know, in fact, I think he's been more than polite afterwards, given
Yeah,
that treatment.
it's such a shame.
Well, and it's baffling that the BBC did not realise what a resource they had in Peter Capaldi playing the Doctor. Yeah, crazy. Can I ask you, do you think the fact that the moon is an egg is the reason why this episode came bottom of the DWM Peter Capaldi poll?
Did it?
It
I
was
don't. I
last.
haven't.
It was last by some margin.
You mean of all his
Of
stories?
all his stories, this is
Oh my
easily the
God.
most hated Peter Capaldi episode.
I had no idea.
Oh, I'm so sorry to inform you of that. No, but then I feel like we're winning at life because we like this.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I love this story. I surely there are much more ridiculous ideas in the show.
Well, yeah, have you not seen In the Forest of the Night?
Yeah, I think I totally buy the moon's egg.
I mean, the TARDIS is a police box that's bigger on the inside than out. The Doctor is a being that can transform his body. Like, this show is used to dealing with pretty wacky concepts.
Yeah, I totally buy the moon's an egg, and I speak that as say that as someone who eats a lot of eggs, so I think
Okay.
that qualifies me.
You could be in a moon a day and not even know about
I
it.
like a bacon and moon sandwich.
You do. What? Okay. Do you think this is a miscalculation on the Doctor's part, then chipping out of the story when he does? Or can you see his point of view?
I don't, well, this is, I can see his point of view, but as in, this is where I enjoy it because I'm viewing the Doctor as a character in any other drama and not as the hero to an adventure show. So I like this because even if he is making a mistake, I'm kind of glad he's making a mistake. As in he's not being bathed in light like the fires of Pompeii and painted to be some kind of deity. You know, stuff like that really fucking winds me up the wrong way.
Oh, I love all that stuff, but then I'm a bit over the top myself. So that's how I'd like to enter a room, you know? You know,
I
in Waters
mean,
of Mars when he comes in and there's all the blue light around him. When he,
yeah.
yeah, that's sort of how I walk into rooms.
Yeah. I mean, I was a big fan of the TV show Girls by Lena Dunham, and that's full of people being unlikable. So I'm just kind of used to, that's what I expect from TV. So
I always say that making mistakes is what makes people interesting, you know, the mistakes they make. And that's how they learn. And it's true of the Doctor. It's true of the show as well. When the show
yeah.
makes not mistakes, but you know, gets it wrong, that's
Yeah, and
usually way more interesting to talk about, yeah.
it's good because this is the Doctor drawing on his reputation of being of saying, well, I am a Time Lord, I know more than you. This is me delegating responsibility, and it completely misfires in his face.
But
And I think that's
she's standing there crying. She's got tears in her eyes and she's screaming his name. And I think sometimes, you know, read the fucking room, all right? Like, she's asking for your help. Don't just go, well, you got this. Don't worry. Oh,
This
anyway.
is also one of those episodes where it still surprises me that the relative budget for a single one-off story, you know, in the middle of the series, I think it looks pretty damn good.
I think a lot of it looks really good.
Yeah.
They sort of went down dark fantasy route in A, didn't they? And they pulled it a lot of it off. Well, suddenly the lights were down, so everything's a lot more atmospheric than it was in Matt Smith's later years.
Yeah, it's just they make the whole moon, and it's just kind of there. It's one of those things where you couldn't believe them doing it in 2005 that
Yeah.
this would become, you know, a mid-season episode. You would have thought, you know, this would have been a two-parter, big, you know, budget-breaking story for the first four or even five series, I reckon.
Having recently done The Waters of Mars, they very quickly got to a point where they could realize that stuff. But it did take four years or so. But this was better than that. Oh, I mean, obviously, it's later on, and the show gets more expensive looking as it goes along, as they grapple with the technology. Do you know, I think I may have figured out what Courtney's doing there. You've got these three women, three very different demographics, all making this decision. What I think doesn't land is her performance. I don't think she can deliver the weight that Jenna Coleman and Hermione Norris are. So she just sort of, her opinion just feels a bit invalid compared to the rest of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's big stuff that I think is quite hard to act. But I think it does, if she wasn't there, it'd be a very different story. And if anything, it was, yeah. I'm glad she's there, because I think it would be maybe the debate would be a bit too clear cut, because it's just two people arguing. I don't know why, but having three
Oh,
people
having a
there.
third voice. Well, listen to these bloody podcasts when you have three people on. There's never a
Yeah.
consensus. You find three people that have the same opinion about a Doctor Who story. It's rare.
Yeah. And I like that they've given them different spacesuits. You know, they didn't have to. They could have been all in orange, but she's got this big grey Duplo outfit.
Hermione Norris, man, she's such a cow. She's giving everyone evils there.
I haven't seen her in anything else. What else has she done?
No, she was in that big ITV comedy drama. Cold Feet. Cold Feet, yeah, it was
Okay,
massive.
yeah, I was kind of before my time.
She was what? Oh, I'm sorry, I forget how young you are. Well, yeah, that was a big drama at the time, and she was like one of six in that
Yeah.
show that was quite big. She sort of does bit parts like this now.
This extra in NASA is pretty good. I noticed this, isn't he? He's got a very small job to do, but it just struck out as pretty clever. And
I've
now
got
he's got.
one scene. I'm going to make it count. All right.
He just had to go, how are things on Earth? And he goes, pretty bad. And he looks off camera as though, like, everybody's dead.
No one gave you that stage direction. Please let me have a bit of business, please.
It's like everybody's died, but he's not allowed to tell them. So he goes, yeah, pretty bad.
Yeah, now
And I
look,
think that.
this is a bit I wish was played out over a bit more time. She just said to everybody on the earth, right, let us know. Is it turn off your lights or turn them on? No, just turn them on, isn't it, so they can see them.
Because the thing is, it wouldn't work. It would whoever's in charge of the power grid is the guy that has the vote. So whoever's in, you know, whoever's actually manning the electricity board for each country, they're who votes. It's not people in their houses voting.
It's Jack Robertson from Arrakis in the UK. Fuck the moon, he's gone and pulled the lever and turned all the lights off. But some
Really,
people are
they
going
should
to be
say, like,
some people will be
this is.
asleep, right?
Yeah, people would be asleep. They'd be like, wake up, what's going on? We've got to turn our lights on.
Imagine the rows in the morning. Excuse me, England was sleeping, okay?
Well, it's
Oh, I
like, do you
love all
remember
of
when
this.
people like bang the pots and pans for the NHS? It'd be like, do you remember when we had to turn our lights on and off to save the earth?
Yeah. Oh, good God. I loved all of that. Slow motion running through the corridors, sparks flying. Great stuff.
Yeah, it's odd, because it doesn't, I guess, because there actually isn't a big action ending to this story, so I guess they have to put small things in there like this to make it more interesting, because it is just them waiting.
What I think would probably give this more weight would be if they had to make this decision themselves for everybody. I suppose you're in a bit in the, you remember the Cold Blood episode where Amy Pond and that woman from Goodness Gracious Me are deciding whether human race and the Silurians are going to have a future together, and as if the rest of the human race are going to go by their word, you know. That's the problem with that scenario, is three people can't really have the say for everybody.
Also, the thing is, the consequence of what's happening and what does happen is that people are suffering on Earth, but we don't see it. So all of the consequence of what's happening isn't seen. But, you know, the astronauts get eaten by spiders, but that's their own fault, because they went to the moon. Whereas all the kind of flooding and tidal issues that they're having, are, you know, all those casualties we don't see.
Peter Harness did claim that the abortion thing, it never was part of this story, and it never entered his mind. But he did put the word aborted into the climax.
No, I totally get that. Yeah, he said he had no idea what was going on.
Know
And
when people, go into the TARDIS, right? And you
yeah.
think, well, maybe there'll be a companion. I have no question in my mind that Hermione Norris was never going to be a companion,
Yeah,
even though she was in the
it'd be good.
TARDIS.
Every story, she just turns up and goes, "Oh, just kill it, just kill
Yeah.
it." But those are the good guys. No, just kill them, just kill
It
them.
would be like having Missy at the TARDIS, wouldn't it? Oh my
Yeah.
God, we did. Wasn't it great?
Now,
Ah, yes. Can you maybe
yes.
explain? Well, go on. Go on.
So this is the only bit of the story that I actually don't like,
Oh, well,
and
there's
I.
another egg.
So, do you know what? If they had put in an effect shot of this thing laying an egg, I'd be fine with it. But also, how does this little, I mean, it doesn't even look like a dragon in that scene. It just looks like a little kind of, it looks like a sea monkey. How is an egg a moo, how is an egg coming out of that thing?
Well, the trouble is it's laid an egg larger than the egg it was housed inside. How is that even possible? Oh.
Is this Camber Sands that they're down at? Because,
Nah, that's quite near me, Camber Sands. No, they're
yeah.
somewhere in Cardiff, surely. It's just, off the coast of Wales.
Yeah, I went there just over a year ago. And because they shot the ultimate foe there, I think. Yeah, it's
Didn't they
pretty.
shoot? I think they shot the chase there as well. When Ian and Vicky are going over the sand dunes.
Yeah, but that doesn't count because it's not recognizable. Like
Oh.
60s TV is so muddy and unclear and in black and white that it's like it's easy. I can visualize the ultimate foe being there, but a Hartnell looks fake even when it's actually on location.
Crazy, isn't it? Did you fall down a quicksand pit? A load of hands pop up out of the sand.
No, but I wanted to.
Oh, I bet you did.
Yeah, I wonder where this beach
I'd
is.
like to see you try to explain that to your girlfriend. What are you doing? No, crash zoom on your face. Oh dear. Oh, we're going now for the pièce de résistance in a second, aren't we? This last scene. Well, not
Yeah.
quite last scene. Well, that's another thing I love about this is obviously it's all been about the moon being an egg and all of that, the dilemma. Actually, what the whole episode has been about has been getting them to this point, and the payoff is incredible. I think Jenna Coleman in this scene, her sort of restrained anger, like fury, is
Yeah.
just magnificent.
Well, this is what I enjoy is that this is the finale, the scene of them in the TARDIS, which is very, very rare because you get so many stories where there's, the adventure is done and there's, some filler dialogue near outside the TARDIS or in the TARDIS at the end. Whereas, this forget the moon stuff. This is the end of the story and this is where everything comes to a head.
She wants to say fucking. I know she says bloody,
Yeah.
but the script wants her to be able to say get in your fucking TARDIS and go,
Yeah.
but she can't say it because we are pre-watershed, and that's
Yeah. And I also love that it's happening in one of the best TARDIS sets.
oh, it's gorgeous, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, love this. Look, come on, Courtney, get out of the TARDIS. I've got to lay into the doctor.
Yeah.
Oh, look at her straight away at the console. No, we are not going anywhere, mate.
Yeah, I
Awesome.
really like just that subtle laugh that he makes when he talks about grey areas.
Well, and he tries to make light of it for as long as possible when he realizes, no, I'm not gonna get her to laugh. Yeah, it's so he misreads us so badly.
I mean, if anything, despite the darkness that this series goes to between these characters, the darkest point for me is actually when he starts punching the console at the end of Death in Heaven.
Oh yeah, that's
That for me, that's when I go, oh, is that a bit too far? That's when it feels like.
no, that's great for me. That's a big crazy melodramatics again, isn't it? Slow motion
Yeah.
punching, sparks flying in slow. Oh, it's great.
Yeah, but as in for a character that is not known for physical violence, it's really odd to see him punching the TARDIS, which is essentially another character in the series.
I do love that whole Danny Pink's okay. Oh, and I found Gallifrey, the two of them lying to each other. And then Santa Claus going, I'm not having this. I'm sorry. We can have a better ending than this. It's great. Stephen
Well,
Moffat, he's so naughty.
and I can see why Jenna Louise Coleman stayed, because they're clearly two incredible actors that clearly enjoy working together. So I think, the show is very privileged to have had the two of them.
One of the lines she has here about, I didn't feel respected. I love that line. Don't you dare lump me in with the rest of those little humans. It's
And
like she's literally punching him around the face with every line.
yeah, it's also, as in, if you're a Doctor Who fan and you've sat through so many classic series scenes of characters in the TARDIS disagreeing, not for any reason, but because they need to fill time.
Call yourself a Time Lord, Jack? A broken clock
To
kids time better than you. It's just
see it
exactly
done
on the same
properly.
level, isn't it?
This to me is the same as suddenly seeing, the Daleks flying on a budget, with decent special effects. It's the same thing of something that has been done terribly
Yeah.
many times before, suddenly done properly.
If Tegan had been written that well, if Janet Fielding had been able to play it that well, we would have sat through all those interminable TARDIS scenes in season 19 with glee.
Oh, back to school.
Back to school. This is my life now. These horrible kids. So,
Despite
Carl,
how.
excuse me, we barely touched on Danny Pink because he's only just appeared now. So now's your chance. Come on. I want to
Okay.
hear about him.
I know people don't like him, but I've never had a problem with him. And I actually really like the actor who plays him. I think it's a slight, it, I think it's quite a nice little nuanced and fairly realistic, performance. But I haven't met anyone else that likes him
There's a
ever.
few. I've heard a few people say they like him. You're a very sort of niche club,
But
but
yeah, I can't unsee it, as in some a lot of things I can go, oh yeah, I can see what you're saying there. But with this, he just ticks the boxes for me.
I just think he would be the most boring date imaginable. He'd be going on about his war stories and the annoying kids at school.
Yeah,
I
but
don't
I
know.
think Joe, he's making up for it in other departments.
Well, he's very pretty. Yes, I won't deny that. In fact,
Particularly the PE department.
when he's in the Santa Claus costume in Last Christmas, now you are talking. Yeah, and he's having a bit of fun with her as well, isn't he? He's like, I'm not wearing anything under this, and I'm like, my God, where was he in Series 8? You know.
If any other fans of Danny Pink are listening, please get in touch and we'll set up the Danny Pink Appreciation Society.
I'll be the janitor. Don't laugh at me when I say this, all right? Because I know under any other circumstances, a character going home and pouring a glass of wine would not be something very adult. But for Doctor Who, it is. For
Yeah,
her
it
to
is.
choose to go and then to have a very mature moment with the person she loves and then go home and pour a glass of wine, and that's basically, we think, the end of her story. It feels really adult.
It is, yeah. I mean, if I wrote it, it would have been a line of coke.
Fair enough. That might have just taken the edge off the end of this episode, mind, if she's there like okay.
Yeah, no,
Oh.
I love moments like that. Yeah, it does. It feels like proper grown-up Doctor Who. So, cheers to that.
What I would like to say as well is I think this Mummy on the Orient Express and Flatline form a trilogy of stories I think are just superb. And for me, to find three episodes on the bounce in the Stephen Moffat era that I say are superb is rare indeed.
Yeah, no,
But
amen. I think they're great. Absolutely great. I was never Mummy on the Orient Express kind of passed me by, and I think it's because I hated Murray Gold's score for when the mummy appears. I think it took
I don't remember it.
it's very bombastic and over the top, and I think it's clear that they've got a very scary prosthetic and they're adding the music to make it less scary, because if it if you strip the music back, it would be even scarier. So I think they're actually trying to soften how grotesque it is. But the actual script itself is great.
And
And it's got
as for
lots of bits that I
Flatline,
missed.
Flatline, I think single-handed, because I was out of Doctor Who in Series 7B. Like, I'd had enough. It just wasn't for me anymore. I was watching it, but sort of hate watching it, you know? And then Flatline hit, and it was so great, so creative, so dark,
Yeah.
giving Clara that brilliant role, shrinking the TARDIS, his hand coming out on the. Oh, everything about it was just amazing. I was like, if the show can still deliver this, I'm in.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird, Doctor Who, and I always like it when it's weird.
Well, I'll tell you what else is weird is the last time you came on this thing, I did not force you to endure choosing three reasons to recommend Quest of Alba, but I
Yeah.
am going to make you do it about Kill the Moon.
Okay. Jenna Louise Coleman,
Okay.
Peter Capaldi.
Now, you can't just choose actors. Come on now.
No, and the third one is Cillit Bang.
All right, well then I'll go for Hermione Norris because I feel like, well, she's not a likable character, she's consistent, you know.
Yeah.
The spiders, just because I think they're great scares, and that last scene between the Doctor and Clara, which is one of the most unforgettable moments between the Doctor and the companion in the new series by
Yeah.
country mile.
Yeah. And number four, boiled
Oh,
eggs.
boiled eggs. Oh, yeah. The fact that you've been eating moons for the last, well, your entire life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact, no, number five, the fact that we can accept that the moon is an egg alongside all the other absurd concepts that Doctor Who has thrown at
Yeah, c come out of the moon closet. As soon as you accept that it's an egg, you'll have a much happier life.
Another thing I didn't ask you to do on the last commentary is to let people know where you are online, should they wish to find you.
Yeah, I post on Twitter a little bit under Jack Who Dat, but really not that much, and mostly about Doctor Who, and that's it.
Well, that's what people listening to this are gonna want to read, so
Yeah, I'm not here just for the eggs, and I've got another podcast about eggs, which is called no, it's not true.
what he does have is another podcast, which he says that he doesn't appear in too often, but actually, I hear you are going to be making more appearances
I'm
coming
making
up.
appearances with it, but it's Dylan's podcast that he puts all the work into. So there's no way that I can steal, like it's his baby that I think I helped out with when it started, and now I will keep going back, and we've got stuff recorded and stuff planned, but it's very much Dylan's baby. I just turn up and say random shit once in a while, which I hope I provided the same service here.
You always do. Jeez, we'll be back in the top 10 again, don't you worry. I mean, I love your brother more than words can say, but when the two of you are on Two Hopper TV, that is when it is like nectar. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, well, that's just pretty much how we talk normally.
Oh, really? Well, we'll just put a microphone in the room then. You'll have years worth of content.
That's the thing, is having two Doctor Who fans in the family, is that it's if we're sat together at family occasions, everyone else gets annoyed because we just start talking this secret language and laughing a lot, and no one has a fucking clue what we're talking about.
But do they know it's Doctor Who? But they
Oh
just don't know any of the
yeah. And then
context.
they'll go, oh, they're talking about that thing again. Yeah. But they'll get annoyed because they're like, oh, they're annoyed because they know we're having a big old laugh and nobody gets it.
I think that's
Except those who
wonderful.
know. Who
I
knows? Joe knows.
know. Yes. Well, I have conversations like that with my other half all the time. And all my friends locally, none of them are Doctor Who fans. So when me and Mark are talking about this stuff, I know the sort of look amongst each other going, what on earth?
Yeah, you need someone when you, yeah, you must need like someone in the corner doing sign language.
That, just that. I did lose the sign for anyone who can't actually see me right now. Jack, thank you so much for your time today. A great episode to talk about and lots of interesting things to say.
Cool. Thank you for having me.
Hang on.
Well,
I'm hoping I can entice you back for a third visit. We'll
yes.
talk off mic about that, but please say you do one more.
Yeah, definitely, of course.
Wow. Until next time, then.